is Friday, February 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
They say, look, it's not a crisis anymore. There's not the urgency that there was. And also, they're getting on top, they say, of dealing with these people who come here and request asylum or protection.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have more on this story coming up. Also ahead, Cardinal Oswald Gracias tells bishops today that Catholic clergy who sexually abuse minors should be reported to civil authorities, including law enforcement. It's all on today's International Edition. A European Union spokesperson told reporters in Brussels this week that the flow of irregular migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea into Europe is no longer a burning crisis. Fabrice Leggeri of the EU Coast Guard Agency says this is the third consecutive year of a drop in migrant arrivals. Migrant crossings from what was once the most popular route crossing the central Mediterranean from Libya has shown an 80% decline in arrivals compared with 2017. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field in Paris about the migrant flow and why the security of the external borders of the EU is likely to be tested this year.
Essentially, they've looked at the figures and they've seen that in 2015, there was about 1.8 million migrants came into the European Union illegally by boat or came across the borders. And that's really gone down. You have a look at 2018, that was just 150,000 and only 9,000 so far in 2019. So they say, look, it's not a crisis anymore. There's not the urgency that there was. And also, they're getting on top, they say, of dealing with these people who come here and request asylum or protection. They say that the percentage, really, of those who are returned to countries of origin is moving along much quicker. They say that 34% of those who applied for asylum last year were actually already returned to their home country after their application was rejected. So they feel that on that level, they've got over the worst of it. They've got in place enough of the measures so as if there is any other sort of great movement like this, that they would be ready.
Why are they saying that the security of the external borders of the EU will likely be tested in this year, in 2019?
Because essentially the mechanisms for people leaving their home countries and trying to come to the European Union have not changed. And they've also seen that more than half of those who are arriving in the European Union are coming from Morocco. Now, these people, majority of them from sub-Saharan countries. So they're saying that the mechanisms are still there. It could still happen. And they are taking measures such as trying to, if you like, integrate their entire information system across the whole of the bloc so as they will have a much wider pool of information and they will be able to exchange this information across all of the EU. So it will be tested, but they feel that in particular this integrated information system, which they're putting a lot of money into, will be able to deal with that.
Also, what else is the EU doing in terms of reinforcing its presence?
One of the really very interesting measures that's been highlighted just in this last week has been, on the one hand, the number of EU liaison officers that they're putting in place outside of the European Union. So they've now put some 450 information officers based outside of the European Union, a lot of those in Africa, to explain to the local governments exactly what will happen if their citizens arrive in the EU, and also to give these countries tips on what they can do to try and keep their population at home, and also for those EU officials to be able to see what the needs are on the ground. On top of that, at the start of this week, the European Union reinforced its so-called common security and defense strategy in the Sahel. Now, they're going to enlarge cooperation with military forces in the Sahel. They're going to actually bring together the military and the civil defense and the civil authorities in those countries, so they'll be able to work together as one team. And that's one of the things they're saying, is that if they can get around the security, reinforce those borders, particularly in the Sahel, they may well have more of a chance of stopping these huge flows of migration, which Europe saw in 2015.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris. Well, on the second day of the Vatican sex abuse meeting, a top church official said Catholic clergy who abuse minors should be reported. Cardinal Oswald Gracias told Catholic bishops from around the world today that civil authorities, including law enforcement officials, should be told about incidents of abuse.
Those who are guilty of criminal behavior are justly accountable to civil authority for that behavior. Although the church is not an agent of the state, the church recognizes the legitimate authority of civil law and the state. Therefore, the church fully cooperates with civil authorities in these matters to bring justice to survivors and to civil order.
As the meeting continues, victims of abuse and high church officials have been calling for reforms to the church. On the first day of the meeting, Pope Francis spoke about the responsibility of the clergy. He gave the bishops a list of 21 reflection points to guide their discussions at the summit. But some critics say the points did not go far enough in pushing for change. Well, Pope Francis' groundbreaking sex abuse summit coincides with an explosive movie and separate book released in France this week, one on pedophilia, a scandal roiling the French church, the other on homosexuality in the priesthood. Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris.
Je m'appelle Alexandre Guérin, père de cinq enfants. Je découvre il y a un mois par hasard que le père
François Ozon's Grâce à Dieu, or By the Grace of God, got the go-ahead just hours before its release on Wednesday, despite efforts to block it in court. The movie is based on a real scandal still rocking the French Catholic Church. It involves priest Bernard Prénat, accused of molesting dozens of boys during the 1980s and 90s.
Il va falloir faire quelque chose.
Il faut réunir d'autres victimes.
Et j'attends depuis toujours ce moment.
The Archbishop of Lyon, Cardinal Philippe Barbarin, is currently on trial on charges of failing to act against the accusations, which he denies. Prénat has confessed to molesting Boy Scouts and is also due to go on trial later this year.
Maman, tu te souviens? Un jour, en sortant du catéchisme, je t'avais dit que Prénat m'avait embrassé.
The movie has already grabbed a top award at Berlin's International Film Festival. Its release here comes at a crucial moment for the Vatican, where senior bishops are meeting for a four-day summit on sexual abuse in the church. Here in France, Ozon's movie is drawing praise, including from members of the Catholic hierarchy who were invited to its preview.
C'est un film que j'ai vu, que nous avons vu pour certains d'entre nous.
Et alors?
C'est un excellent film du côté des personnes victimes.
Vincent Nemo, spokesman for the French Bishops' Conference, told French TV the movie was excellent in terms of portraying the victims, although less so when it came to the clerics. He called it a building block in the fight against pedophilia.
Quand j'ai rencontré toutes ces personnes, je me suis rendu compte que tout était complexe. C'était pas les méchants contre les
Ozon's depiction is not black and white, a reality he acknowledged in this interview on French radio. When he met the real-life protagonist, he said he realized everyone was a victim to a certain extent. Only now, he says, is the church coming to terms with the seriousness of sexual abuse.
Et l'Église est acculée, elle est obligée d'agir et de répondre.
François Deveau, head of victims group La Parole Libérée, and who is portrayed in the movie, told French TV he hopes the church finally takes action on a scandal that has tainted the institution for centuries. Meanwhile, a controversial book on homosexuality in the church hits stores on Thursday. In the Closet of the Vatican is reportedly based on hundreds of interviews and exposes a gay subculture and duplicity allegedly rife in the Catholic hierarchy.
C'est une majorité silencieuse dans le sens où chacun protège son petit secret et son objectif.
In interviews like this one, gay author Frédéric Martel describes a so-called silent majority in the church where he claims members are protecting their sexual status by pretending to be homophobic. The book has drawn criticism, however, and some believe it may undermine efforts to gain acceptance of homosexuality within the church. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Among the top stories in the world, Turkish police raided the homes of hundreds of military personnel today in connection with the July 2016 failed coup. The father of an American-born woman who joined the Islamic State terrorist group filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration because he wants his daughter to be allowed to return to the U.S. and an Israeli spacecraft is on its way to the moon. It was launched by a Falcon 9 rocket last night from Cape Canaveral in the U.S. state of Florida. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have recently been able to gain some insight into the creation of Neptune's tiniest moon, Hipposcamp, thanks to observations made with the NASA ESA Hubble Space Telescope. Hipposcamp, which has a diameter of only 34 kilometers, was discovered in 2013 after scientists analyzed Hubble-captured images of Neptune. The scientists theorized that Hipposcamp is actually a fragment of a close neighboring moon, Proteus, after a comet impacted it billions of years ago. Photos taken in 1989 by NASA's Voyager 2 spacecraft show a huge impact crater on Proteus that scientists say is large enough that could have caused the moon to shatter. The tiny moon orbits Neptune at a distance of about 105,000 kilometers and is within only 12,000 kilometers of Proteus. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The United States Geological Survey says that a 7.5 magnitude earthquake hit Ecuador near the border with Peru early this morning. The quake's epicenter was in a sparsely populated area 17 kilometers south of the town of Montalvo at the depth of 132 kilometers. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center said that there was no risk of a tsunami. Early reports indicate there are some injuries and structural damage, but authorities in Ecuador say they are still gathering information. A second earthquake measured at 5.5 struck eastern Ecuador about 20 minutes later at a depth of 82 kilometers. According to the USGS, most major earthquakes in South America are at a shallower depths of 70 kilometers or less. VOA's International Edition continues. Well, tomorrow, Nigeria holds its presidential and National Assembly elections. The winners will face a disturbing challenge: how to help millions of children who suffer from malnutrition in Africa's most populous country. While hunger as a whole is gradually declining in Nigeria, the rate of acute malnutrition and stunted growth has seen little or no improvement. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja.
And his wife's two-year-old triplets are among millions of Nigerian children suffering from malnutrition. Shingiri says they could not afford to feed them properly as babies and can't afford it now. We are begging the government to help us because we don't have money to even buy food. We are begging the government, he says. According to the United Nations Children's Fund, child hunger in Nigeria is declining by about 3% per year. But the rate of severe acute malnutrition, the technical term for starvation, remains unchanged. The UN Children's Agency says 2.5 million Nigerian children are starving and only about 20% of that figure get help. Nigeria's health ministry distributes food and treatment, but Clementina Okoro, a nutrition expert with the ministry, admits it's not enough.
It's really a serious issue of public health concern. Malnutrition has been on the rise, yes, over 900,000 children die annually.
Widespread poverty, insecurity in the north, and poor health care are major triggers for child malnutrition in Nigeria. Exclusive breastfeeding gives children a better start in life, but not enough mothers practice it, says pediatrician Adeyemi Adeniran.
From the point of birth, the baby is being introduced to breastfeeding, and that is the cheapest and the best. But the advocacy and the awareness about this has been a bit poor. We're also bringing that on board now to encourage mothers to make sure they breastfeed exclusively for 6 months.
But better health care only goes so far in alleviating widespread poverty. Nigerians are going to the polls on Saturday, and whoever emerges president faces the challenge of improving the economy so more Nigerian children can live long and healthy lives. Timothy Obiezu, for VOA News, Abuja.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. Can the United States and China step back from the brink of their trade war before President Trump imposes more tariffs on Chinese imports? We'll talk about the politics and substance of the trade talks with our special guest, Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson Center. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily reports when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Well, the 91st Academy of Motion Pictures Awards ceremony is Sunday at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood. From rolling out the iconic red carpet to closing roads and to filling Oscar-themed stores, Hollywood is making its final touches before the big night packed with celebrities, gowns, and glamour. Well, joining me live here in the studio to talk about the Oscars is VOA film correspondent Penelope Pulu. And thank you so much, Penelope, for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, the Oscars this year will not have a host, and that's for the second time in the ceremony's history. So why isn't there a host this year?
I think the ceremony, the Academy, is plagued with a lot of logistical problems regarding the show. There have been complaints throughout the years that the show is running too long, too tedious. They have seen a dip in the viewership worldwide, and they are trying to put their finger on the pulse as to what they need to rejigger and revitalize the show and make it relevant to millennials and younger people who are watching it in different mediums. It's not just the TV anymore. It can be on your laptop, can be on your cell phone. Do you want to stay there and watch it for 3 or 4 hours? So they're trying to make it more relevant. Plus, of course, there are politics involved. They were supposed to have a host who, however, backed out last minute. There were problems about his background, accused of some homophobic messages, which he retorted and said it wasn't the case. So a lot of politics, but that's not, in my opinion, the main issue why they are trying to change format.
Yes, and just sticking on that subject, this is like the last year in 2018, the Oscars hit its ratings low. And so do you think that, I know you said politics is not the only thing, but also actors, they do use this as an opportunity to express their political views. So just how much of an impact does politics have on the Oscars?
That is a very, very difficult question to answer, and I can only answer to you in one way. We have about 8,000 voters, 8,000 voters from all kinds of backgrounds voting for Best Picture. We have so many people coming from different political backgrounds. So a message that, let's say, a female actress may want to give about women and equality may be received very positively by a certain group of people and not as positively by others. So I would not necessarily attribute the messages, that the political messages that actors would use, as something that has hurt the Oscars. I think it's mainly the sluggishness and how long they are and their format. That's my main issue.
And let's just talk a little bit about some of the movies that are up. The film Green Book, starring Mahershala Ali and Viggo Mortensen, is nominated for 5 Oscars. This is the story set in early 1960s, and it centers on the development of an interracial friendship. So how do you think this movie will fare at the Oscars?
The movie was fantastic in terms of connecting emotionally with the audience. I have to say it's one of my favorites. However, the movie has received criticism that it whitewashed the segregation era and that the story was told primarily from the perspective of a white man who was the driver. Now, in defense of the film, I spoke with both the filmmaker and Viggo Mortensen, and we analyzed why the perspective was told, and the answer was because they had the memoirs of the driver, Tony the Lip, who passed them down to his son, who wrote the script. So, you know, one can argue that that was personal opinion, that was accurate, that was historically accurate. That's what they decided to go by. But if the film loses, it will be because it has received criticisms about the whitewashing after so many tumultuous years of Black Lives Matter.
And just quickly, what movie would you like to see win?
Ah, that's a difficult one. Two, I would say, are my favorites. Roma by Alfonso Cuarón, which has received 10 Oscar nominations and will be the first ever film to get that award as foreign language film. And Black Panther.
Oh, great. Okay, good. Thank you so much. I appreciate your insight. That's VOA film correspondent Penelope Pulu.
Thank you.
Many people don't.
Well, infectious diseases like measles were once considered under control in rich countries, but now the World Health Organization warns that we could be facing a global measles outbreak. Measles cases have risen sharply around the world, especially in developed countries. VOA's Carol Pearson has more about the disease's spread.
Many people don't think of measles as a big deal, but measles can kill. It can also cause permanent disabilities. So far this year, 10 states in the U.S. have reported measles cases. Dr. Camille Sabella at Cleveland Clinic Children's expects it to break out in Ohio, too.
Measles is incredibly contagious. Once it gets around the community, it's very difficult because it's airborne.
The virus spreads by droplets coughed into the air. Dr. Nancy Messonnier of the Center for Disease Control warns people to get vaccinated.
If a person with measles is in a room with 10 other people who are unvaccinated, 9 of them will get measles.
The virus can stay in the air or on surfaces for 2 hours. And Messonnier says it's not always obvious who has it.
Somebody can transmit measles 4 days before they have the rash. That means they can transmit it even before they know that they're infectious.
Dr. Roberta DiBiase at Children's National Medical Center says it's even hard for doctors and nurses to know who has measles early on.
A child coming in the prodrome of measles will look like any other child with a cold. You know, will have a runny nose and a cough and won't have that rash for 4 days.
Sabella says measles is especially dangerous for babies and young children.
It is very difficult to protect children during a measles outbreak if they have not been vaccinated.
The rash usually begins on the face and spreads to other parts of the body. Measles is accompanied by a high fever, which in itself can be dangerous for children. Some people have severe complications. Measles can cause pneumonia. That's the most common cause of death from the measles virus in young children. Measles can also infect the brain and cause death or permanent damage. The best protection against measles is a vaccine. That's what Dr. Catherine O'Brien at the World Health Organization says.
The vaccine has been around for over 50 years. Hundreds of millions of children have received this vaccine and are now healthy, thriving adults, in large part because they didn't die of measles, because they got vaccine.
The World Health Organization says there were more cases of measles in 2018 than in 2017, largely because an increasing number of parents are not vaccinating their children. In rich countries, it's by choice. In poor countries, it's because there often is no choice. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.